Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It is Wednesday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Boward, and the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lawrence, unfortunately, couldn't join us today, but he'll be back very soon. Don't worry about that. We're going to be going through some of the biggest news, doing the rounds today, a bit of the transfer gossip as well. We're also going to be answering your questions. I think we'll be back every Wednesday. You know, Wednesday is the traditional front three day until the weekend of August the 7th when the Community Shield's back. Then we'll be going back to two a week, doing the old Wednesday pods and the Sunday Q&As. For now, though, we're going to try and combine them on Wednesdays, I think.
Big news.
Before we get into the big news, got to give comment of the week this week. It's going to one man and one man only. It's Thomas Lang, who tweeted us essentially a few nice pictures of his little holiday. He said, after an incredible experience travelling Europe on a football adventure, visiting places like the Bernabeu, New Camp and Old Trafford, it's time to go home. Good thing I have the last few front three podcasts to keep me busy on the 15-hour trip back to South Africa. So we're storing them up, and now I hope enjoyed them.
That's what a lad. Yeah, can keep them up for one binge listen.
You know, obviously
we don't support binging, but you know, if you want to do that, go for it.
Do we not?
Not binging the podcast, binging in general. You know, general life binging.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. Drinking too much. You know. These types of things.
You're right. You are 100% right. Let's get into the news then, Dave. There's only one place to start. It's Paul Pogba. I mean, the saga continues. We've actually got something concrete, though. Manchester United have officially, according to reports, made an opening bid for the Frenchman.
officially?
No, but this is pretty concrete. I mean, the club... Yeah, it's not come out and confirmed, and neither is Juventus, but this is happening, Dave. They have made a bid worth a total of £100 million, with £13 million of that in performance-related add-ons. The Serie A club have rejected that because they want United to pay £100 million with a further £8 million in add-ons, which, of course, would make the Frenchman the most expensive player ever. Ed Woodward's been meeting with the Juventus directors as well as the player's agent, Mina Raiola. So it feels like... You know, United are probably going to up to that fee. Do you reckon, Dave?
Oh, God, yeah, please. I'm so excited.
That excited.
He's so good. He's so good. You know, he gets criticised for being a little bit inconsistent. Yeah, at the European Championships, we didn't see the best Pogba. But having watched Pogba quite a lot last season, he's a game changer. He's one of those players that he's very rare in modern football that can like change things in an instant. And he's a player that you sort of, you know, will pull you off your seat. You know, he'll turn a man, he'll beat a man, he'll get running at defenders, he'll draw people in. And he does shoot a lot, which again for United is very positive. He had 124 shots in Serie A last season, 50 more than any United player managed in the Premier League. Obviously, United just couldn't, you know, they struggled to create chances last season. And someone like Pogba that can drive, that can open up space for the likes of Martial, the likes of Mkhitaryan, the likes of Ibrahimovic, it's just the perfect signing for me. This. Again, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. If United sign Pogba, they'll win the Premier League.
Wow, that is one hell of a claim, one hell of a prediction. I mean, Abdul Rahman Faghi writes in to say, if United sign Pogba, will they be favourites for the title? I'm not sure if they're favourites, but you seem to think it elevates them up to the potential.
Yeah, I think United City are still favourites because of Pep Guardiola and how he does get an extra 50% out of players in terms of their technique, their ability, how he evolves players. We've seen so many players be under Guardiola and really change, really become dynamic. You know, Busquets, Lionel Messi, two players that are like the best in the position at the world that were with Guardiola at Barcelona B, then came to the first team and have just been excellent since. So I think Guardiola does put City into favourites, but Manchester United, with the signings they've made, incredible business, incredible. It's so frustrating as a United fan to think of the last few seasons that we've messed about and we've ended up signing players on the last day, which is absolutely crazy. But, you know, Mourinho seems to be in charge, which I like a lot. I want Mourinho to be the guy that's making all the decisions. And, you know, why not can United not win the league? You know, they're perfectly set up to play a different style to Guardiola as well, you know, play a very aggressive, direct style, which is just going to make the Premier League so fascinating next season. I just can't wait. I can't wait. I want it to be the 13th of August, right, like now.
People are talking about Mourinho. People are saying he's acting as if Paul Pogba is already at the club. Did you see the? It was absolutely hilarious. It was his daughter, I think, tweeted out a picture of him sort of standing. His tactics board was sort of halfway in the picture behind a doorway somewhere, and it was very blurry. But it looked like he'd already got Pogba in the midfield of his tactics board there, which people were taking as confirmation that he's coming to United. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen anything like that confirming a transfer. But it does feel like it's happening. I mean, Chinmay Diwale says, is it actually going to happen? It feels like now it is. You know, I think they are going to up their offer to what Juventus want, 108 million. Real Madrid, of course, with the other club interested, where Pogba was, you know, apparently more keen to go to, but they can't afford the deal. So he's apparently relaxed about it. He's happy to go to United. He's happy to stay at Juventus. But I think all the other parties are going to push this through, be it the agent, be it Manchester United, who are willing to pay that money. And I think for Juventus as well, that's a huge income, a huge profit on a player who cost them essentially nothing. Does the fee worry you slightly, Dave? Or 108 million is, of course, a lot of money. It's a world record fee. But at the same time, the market feels like it's changed somewhat in this summer. I mean, it feels almost like 30 million now is almost the barometer. It's the price tag for you know, not world-class players, but kind of, you know, good sort of, you know, solid signings. So £100 million to get potentially the best midfielder in the world. I know it's crazy, best but in the context of the game, is it that crazy?
No, I don't think it is. I think that we need to sort of half transfer fees these days and we'll get a proper realisation of what it was in, say, 2008, maybe. Because you'd imagine Pogba around that time would have gone for about 50 million. You know, some of the Benteke that's 32 from two different clubs, Palace obviously bidding that for them and him rejecting that move. But it, you know, it has gone a bit mad, and I think we'll see more transfers of this value. I can't see Paul Pogba being a record signing for, say, 2 years. That's not going to happen. You know, the next big cheese is going to come along and somebody's going to get their cheese book out and give him some cash. So I feel it's just interesting. It's an interesting place to be really involved with football. Again, £100 million, you could solve so many issues with that. You could probably build a whole team. You know, imagine if you had 100 mil at championship level, you'd get promoted straight away. Or imagine if someone in our government, in a department, maybe like, you know, NHS, maybe they could throw 100 million out. It'd be a better way to do. But for football, it's an interesting place right now, and it's moving on and it's evolving. And for us, you know, for people that talk about the game or people that are interested in the game, it's just, you know, it's taking it to that next level and more interest and so forth. So I'm not happy with the amount of money. No, I feel it's quite bad spending £100 million considering actually how much that is. That's like 200 houses in London, you'd say. And if we put it like that, it's quite disgusting. But in a way, if we don't put it like that and just say, yeah, the game's going to get more better, you know, better, there's going to be more money for youth academies. I'm looking forward to that in a way.
Let's stick on Manchester United for a second. Then we've got another question coming in on Twitter. Tom Reeks at Tomzor, thank you very much for your question. He said, Dave, which player at United do you think will benefit the most from Jose Mourinho?
I think that Eric Bailly is going to really, and Chris Smalling, I think both of those centre-backs are really going to benefit from Mourinho just because of his style. Mentioned before, the Smalling factor on that right-hand side, I feel like he's really bad in that zone, doesn't know what to do. But with Mourinho, they'll sit a lot deeper, they'll be in their like calm zone. You watch Bailly, you know, if you've seen any of Bailly that isn't YouTube clips that makes him look stupid against Fernando Torres, he's a very good penalty box defender. He's very calm, very assured, holds his position well, and makes the clearances or makes the interception at the right time. And that is it, it's timing. Yes, he has issues playing high, But so many defenders in world football have issues playing high. Boateng gets caught out of there. Hummels gets caught out of there. A lot of players get caught if they play high. But with Mourinho, they'll sit a lot deeper. And I just feel those two players are really going to evolve. But also in an attacking sense, I think Jesse Lingard, he's going to
really?
Benefit.
Okay.
I hope Jesse Lingard hits the gym. But I feel like he's a Mourinho-type player, a player that works very hard. So, you know, in the bigger games, you can play Jesse Lingard off a striker. Get him to press, get him to harry, get him to do a lot of work and then sub him off maybe 60 minutes. You know, similar to an Oscar type of player, what which I'm quite happy to have.
What about, I mean, a couple of the question marks are Memphis Depay, of course, who obviously didn't have a great season under Louis van Gaal, and Wayne Rooney. I mean, the question marks were always over him. Where's he going to play? Has he still got it? All this sort of stuff. I mean, are you feeling positive first about Rooney and how he might fit in under Mourinho? It feels a lot might be decided or be discovered really from Mourinho at the International Champions Cup, which is they're playing in pre-season.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be, again, it's another tactical point of a lot of interest. Will Rooney play number 10? Will he play number 9? Will he be rotated with Zlatan? But I feel
Mourinho said in his opening press conference, he doesn't see him as a midfielder.
No, so he's not going to be a 6 or he's not going to be an 8 under Mourinho, which in a way, that's fine. If you're going to define his position early doors and you're saying that he's a striker or an attacking midfielder, that's fine for me. But I feel with Rooney that it kind of feels like Mourinho will play him. I'm not sure. I want to see Wayne Rooney in a Mourinho team at number 10 and see how he does, because quite frankly, this could be the season where it finally clicks for him and he becomes that more mature player and he's making the right decisions. You know, we saw for England that he had a standout performance in the group stages, but then was very, very poor against Iceland, made the wrong decisions. But I think Mourinho is the right type of man for him. Wayne Rooney's at his best when he's counter-attacking. You know, when that 2008 team, he was so good at combining with Ronaldo and Tevez and Park Ji-sung. And that's the Rooney that I'd like to see again. Obviously, a lot, you know, not as fast as he was, but maybe play a deeper role in those breaks. You know, playing those the first pass to Zlatan, and then those three can, you know, the Martial, Mkhitaryan, Zlatan triangle can combine. But I feel that Rooney will play.
Do you think Depay is going to come good as well under Mourinho?
I hope so. You know, he seems like he's a good guy and he seems like he's working hard to get there. I'd quite like to see him as well at number 10. I felt he played quite well at number 10 for Louis van Gaal in the last pre-season and then was just shunted out to the wing for some unknown reason. You know, you play the first game where you win against Tottenham at number, you know, he's there at number 10 and then he just changes it again, but that's Louis van Gaal. And you know, what he was thinking for a lot of the season, I don't know. But that was a strange one. But I feel that he could. Again, Memphis, number 10, Mourinho. Ooh.
Back to some of the transfers and the rumours doing the rounds. Jorginho Wijnaldum could be on his way to Liverpool. Ritalk Apple on Twitter writes in and says, is it a good move if it does indeed happen? Looks like it is happening now. Our good friend and fellow from Freer, Chris Hennage, says that it looks like a deal is on the verge of being done. £25 million. Move to Liverpool. Speaking of those sort of £30 million players we were talking about for average, decent players, looks like he's going to Liverpool. Do you see him fitting in to the red squad, Dave? And I mean, is it a good signing? I feel like Liverpool fans are getting a little bit frustrated with the quality of the signing that they're managing to attract to the club. You see Chelsea and you see Manchester United, who neither of those clubs have Champions League football either. And yet they're managing to get, you know, in Chelsea's case, potentially the best player last season in N'Golo Kante coming to Stamford Bridge. Manchester United managing to attract Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Maybe not, you know, he's got his pluses on the pitch, but also off the pitch as well. And of course, you know, we're talking about Mkhitaryan. We're talking about Paul Pogba, potentially the best midfielder in the world. Liverpool, it feels they're a little bit, not struggling, but they're not quite on the same level in that regard.
I think with Liverpool, with Jurgen Klopp, it's not about the signings. It's not about the big players. It's about the team. For someone like Wijnaldum, he's a team player. You know, Newcastle were awful last season. He still managed to score 11 goals and get 5 assists. He was the only standout player, you know, scoring 5 goals in one game. He's a player of top quality.
Those 5 goals in the one game, does that not make it sound less impressive than 11 goals?
It does definitely skew the stats a little bit, I agree. But this Newcastle team last year were rubbish, absolutely rubbish. But I feel with Klopp, he's going to sign players that are going to build a team, and that's what Liverpool need to do if they want to compete. You know, they might not be able to compete with the resource for the likes of Manchester United, Chelsea and so forth. So they need to be a team. And we saw last season that the team won the Premier League. So I wouldn't be afraid if I was a Liverpool fan for signing Wijnaldum. I think he's a very, very good player, can play a number of roles in midfield. If Klopp were to play three central midfielders, he could be one of them. You know, scored quite a lot. I think it was 15 goals in the Eredivisie playing that role for PS, PSV. I like how he works very hard. So I feel like he can be a good signing for them. But there was something that was, I think I came up on Twitter. So with this £20 million deal that's quoted for Wijnaldum, we mean Liverpool have spent £230 million on players from Newcastle, Southampton, Sunderland and Aston Villa since 2011, which is pretty crazy.
Wow. Wow. It's it's an interesting one, isn't it? It is an interesting one. Hopefully, I think Liverpool fans will like your interpretation of it. The fact that, you know, it is about the team and maybe it's not quite as... There's no reason to panic, essentially, because Liverpool fans don't seem massively happy at the moment. Stay on the transfers. Piotr Gala, long-time listener, writes in. He says, what do you expect Dortmund to achieve next year if they manage to sign Schürrle and Goetze? It's an interesting one, isn't it, Dave? Because, you know, we've spoken about this before, how Carlo Ancelotti's coming in at Bayern Munich. Mm. His focus may be elsewhere, maybe on European competition. Dortmund, yes, they've lost key players in Ilkay Gundogan and obviously Henrik Mkhitaryan. They signed a number of very impressive young players. And if they can get Schürrle and Goetze, that just strengthens their squad even more.
I think the Schürrle and Goetze, Schürrle, I like him. He's a very, very good player. But Mario Goetze, it seems like a really weird one for Tuchel. You know, Tuchel does like to play with three forwards. There's not really that much room for an attacking midfielder in there, and you'd say that Shinji Kagawa's definitely got that berth. But what I like about the Dortmund signings is how they've done so well with youth. You know, Ousmane Dembele, the best player, best young player in potentially in Europe last season, 12 goals, 5 assists, so good with the ball at his feet, so good at accelerating, decelerating past players, can play a number of positions. I feel like he's going to be the one that's going to replace Mkhitaryan. You know, Bartra to come and replace Hummels, that's perfect. Getting Guerrero from Lorient before the Euros was very, very smart. Every time I saw Lorient, for whatever reason, I was watching Lorient in the last two seasons, he's always been very impressive, Guerrero. Very good. He played more like left wing than left back when I ever saw Lorient. And he was good on the ball, very confident, took people on. You know, and for Dortmund, who they've kind of needed a bit of an upgrade for their fullbacks with Piszczek and Schmelzer getting a little bit older. Getting Guerrero in there is perfect. Emre Mor, again, the youngest player ever to register assist at the European Championships, a very talented player, very agile. And then Mikel Merino, who we've not really heard much about, Osasuna, again, young Spanish midfielder. Mm. And again, you go back to that Ancelotti point about, you know, he's coming at Bayern, he's got a squad. You know, you've said before that he could play two 11s, right? And probably play an 11 each in the Bundesliga and the Champions League. But the always thing, I used to be quite critical of Ancelotti, tactically quite inflexible. In a way, you know, he loved that his system, the Christmas tree, which, you know, he was quite rigid with when he was at Milan. It was sort of a diamond that moved to that system. I always thought he was quite rigid and didn't really change up his system. So always when you think someone's rubbish at what they do, go and dive in and find a little bit more about them. And Carlo Ancelotti is a very, very smart man in terms of that. What he did with that Real Madrid side that won the Decima was brilliant, defended very well. After Mourinho, they, you know, opened it up, they defended in a 4-4-2, attacked in a 4-3-3, they had a lot of freedom, the players loved it. But what happens with Ancelotti is whenever he wins the Champions League, he's never won the league in the same season.
Yeah.
Third with Milan in 2003, fourth in 2007, and then third again with Real Madrid in 14. So that's the only thing. Carlo Ancelotti at the moment never has been able to deal with a squad to win, to compete on two fronts, with the Champions League being one, because that's obviously a massive tournament. So it's going to be that question. He now has the squad to do that. And I'd love it. I love Carlo. You know, after digging in deeper to Carlo Ancelotti, you've got to read his book if you've not before. You know, whichever autobiography you pick up, he's just a great guy. He seems like a brilliant guy to, like, go to Italy and him to, like, select all the food and so forth. Big into his food, big into his tortellini, his wine, his pig.
He sounds like my kind of guy. Sounds like my kind of guy.
He seems like a great guy, and I'd love to meet him one day. And hopefully, I like Carlo. Carlo, if you're listening.
Come
in
on,
touch.
Let's do this. Yeah, I love how his Twitter handle is Mr. Ancelotti as well.
It's brilliant, isn't it? He's just class. He's just a class bloke. I think that's what he is. And he'd be, you know, we'll get it. One Adam, we'll get him on one day. We'll get him on.
Let's go through some of the other transfers doing the rounds. There's one other interesting bit of news we'll get to as well. Stoke have made a £20 million bid for Saido Berahino. That's on the BBC. We've also got Chelsea rejecting a £14.5 million bid from Borussia Mönchengladbach for defender Andreas Christensen. West Brom want Kieran Clarke from Aston Villa for £4.5 million. That's in the Independent. Grant Hanley is set to undergo medical at Newcastle after the club agreed a £5.5 million fee with Blackburn. That's on Sky Sports. Mauro Icardi could be on his way to Arsenal. That's according to Corriere della Sera. Arsene Wenger is set to meet Mauro Icardi's agent and wife, the infamous Wanda Nara. potentially to agree personal terms on that one. Can't see that one happening myself. And finally, Nevin Subotic, his move to Middlesbrough, has apparently fallen through over concerns over his fitness, despite an £8 million fee being agreed. That leads me to a question that's come in on Twitter from Jack T, which says, with the multiple great Middlesbrough signings, minus Subotic, we're talking about Valdez, reportedly Alvaro Negredo could be on the verge of joining. Where would you place them in the table at the end of the season? What do you reckon, Dave?
I think they're definitely going to stay up 100%. What Karanka's done with that side is he's made it, you know, he's turned it very resolute. They kept 21 clean sheets in the Championship last season. That's more than any other side. And what you'll see with this Middlesbrough side is they'll work hard, but they'll be structurally be very, very good. And they'll catch people out. They'll you know, at the start of the season, people are like, oh, it's just Middlesbrough. But they'll catch people out. And if they can make some of these signings that have been linked with the club, then that'll be absolutely fantastic. You know, the signing of Victor Valdez, still a very good goalkeeper. I feel like if they could have got Subotic, that could have been a very good deal as well. But yeah, I reckon like 14th maybe.
So the big news doing the round today, guys, is the Premier League is set to introduce new player behaviour rules. Dave, have you heard of this one?
No, I haven't. I've been waiting for this.
Let me lay it out for you. So plans have been designed to reduce what the FA calls intolerable behaviour by players and managers in English football. It's going to be introduced in the Premier League.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This year, because poor conduct has reached unacceptable levels. Starting this season, red cards will be issued to players who confront match officials and use offensive language or make gestures towards them. Behaviour within the technical areas will also be more rigorously enforced. Not one player has ever been sent off in the Premier League for insulting or abusive language towards a match official in the last five seasons. But Premier League chairman Richard Scudamore said there have been some concern that players have been overstepping the mark. What's your initial reaction to that one, Dave? I feel like this is a positive thing. I mean,
it's
tiresome. It's a little bit troubling when you see players crowd around the referee who I feel increasingly have an impossible task to do. It's a thankless task, essentially. Impossible with the pace of the game to really get everything 100% right, but that doesn't stop players abusing them and jumping in.
I kind of feel like this is it's good to be brought in. I think this is a good decision making. You know, it's a good thing that Scudamore wants to do this. But surely referees have got that power before. Surely they had that last season. And surely they should have booked someone. If they're getting crowded, book one of them, because they're not going to do that next time, are they?
I think this is it now. It's been made crystal clear. Good. This is exactly the warning's been outlined, what's going to happen. You know, so the lines can't be crossed, essentially. So these are the new offences or the new, you know, rulings which could earn a player a yellow card. So if they are visibly disrespectful towards any match official, that's a yellow card. If there's any aggressive response to a decision, yellow card. If you confront an official face-to-face, that's a yellow card. So no more Joe Hart laying the butt on poor Michael Oliver, anything like that. If you run towards an official to contest a decision, so, you know, when you see goalkeepers running the length of the pitch to try and, you know, remonstrate the referee, that's not happening anymore.
Give him the cheese!
If you use insulting, offensive or abusive language or gestures towards match officials, physical contact with any match official in a non-aggressive manner, just any sort of physical contact, sort of holding them back or anything like that, that's a yellow card. And this has caused a little bit of controversy. A yellow card for at least one player when two or more from a team surround a match official. So if, say, three players surround one of you, is at least getting a yellow card.
Yeah, I think the guy that's getting this in your grill was giving it you the biggie. You know, why did he tackle me? Yeah, see you later, buddy. Get out of here.
It will, the red card offences, I should say. If a player confronts match officials and uses offensive, insulting or abusive language and or gestures towards them, as if they confront them and use that sort of language, that's a red card. And if there's any physical contact...
Really clap. Remember that one against Villarreal?
And if there's any sort of physical contact with match officials in an aggressive or confrontational manner, like a push or anything like that, straight red card. A lot of people sort of saying, you know, this could be chaos for the first few weeks of the new Premier League season. Could be a bit confusing. Could be, you know, fans not appreciating red cards and yellow cards getting flown about. But I think, like we're both saying, I think it's inevitable and it's for the good of the game, essentially.
Yeah, so, you know, Eric Dier would have got sent off in that game against Chelsea, right?
Oh, yeah. He would have got sent off in that game.
They were crowding, both teams were crowding the ref, weren't they? Loads. But that was an excellent game. You know, very, very physical at the end.
But it has, you know, last season there were a couple of cases where it got a little bit ridiculous. So I'm glad they've managed to bring that in and that you've got no qualms from me. I'm fully behind it. Let's answer a few questions then to wrap up the podcast. We've had loads coming in on Twitter. First one coming in from, I like this one, the comment of the week himself, Thomas Lang writes in, what's your favourite flavour of crisps? That's an interesting one. Big fan of a Flamin' Hot Monster Munch or Ranch Doritos. Don't eat a lot of crisps. Not a big crisp man, but if I had to choose, I'd probably go for Flamin' Hot Monster Munch. What about you?
So I'm a massive crisp fan, but you know, currently trying to hit the gym, trying to put on some muscles.
Dem gains, gains.
Yeah, dem gains. I've had to like avoid crisps like the plague. But if you were to, you know, to pull me into a room and say, Dave, you've got one packet of crisp left of your life, what would you go for? I'd go for the nice and spicy knickknacks. They are
knickknacks? Are you serious? Of all the crisps?
They are unbelievable.
Are they the like cheesy ones?
No, they're not the cheesy ones. They're just a really weird flavour. The orange packet. If you've never had them, I'd go on the internet now and just order 30 packs.
I like kettle chips. You know, kettle chips over here.
No, you see, I prefer, you know, salt and vinegar is my like backup flavour of crisps. That's like if you can't get the knickknacks, get salt and vinegar. But I like the cheap versions. I like the cheap Walker's packet over like the kettle chips ones. They're just too fancy for me, Adam. I'm a
too
simple
fancy,
man.
Mate. Simple man, simple pleasures. Charlie writes in, what do you reckon, who do you reckon, I should say, will be the unexpected player of the year? That's a tough one. Who will be the sort of unexpected player, maybe sort of a breakout player? I've got high hopes in a Spurs sense for Josh Onuma. We saw him a few times last season. Mauricio Pochettino described him as a special player. I think he's going to get more chances in the first team this year. So it'd be good to see him sort of break out and score a few goals for Spurs and maybe make the headlines. Anyone else that you can think of there?
Sure, I think there could be some emergence of some of the young Liverpool players. Is it Woodburn that plays up top?
Well, David Shanahan writes in with a similar question. Who's going to be the breakout player this season? If your answer isn't Marco Gruic.
Yeah, Gruic. You're wrong. You know, he's also been impressive, right?
Yeah. He could be the unexpected sort of breakout player. Fossey Mensah for Man United, he's sort of already emerged, I guess. So it wouldn't be unexpected. What about Andreas Pereira? He scored in pre-season already, I think in Jose Mourinho's first game, did he not?
Yeah, Pereira's a player of immense talent. Potentially not tactically switched on enough to play under Louis van Gaal, but hopefully under Mourinho will be given the freedom. Why he's such a talented player, again, it's that agility, it's his close control, but he's a threat from set pieces. And again, United was so poor last season from set pieces, and they've had a massive upgrade. You know, Zlatan coming in, McTiernan can take a corner. You know, it's going to be fast. There's not going to be no more Phil Jones on corners, Adam. Don't you worry.
Thank God for that.
Pereira could be a breakout, but I feel with Mourinho that he's going to go with a strong side. You know, that's what Mourinho does. He plays a very competitive side. And if the young players aren't good enough, they're not going to play. But I really hope Fosu has a breakout season and starts at right back for United, because I feel that United have lacked a right back for a few years now. Post the Raphael 2012-13 season, where he was immense. I think they've really struggled in that area. So hopefully young Timo can jump into there.
Sinan Faruqi writes in, what signings do you think Chelsea need to make? And do you think Conte is a long-term solution? Is Conte a long-term solution, first off? How long can
It'll be a three-year man, I reckon, until you know, he falls out. The players very, very strict, as we do know. But I feel that Chelsea, you've probably got to get a central midfielder.
in addition to N'Golo Kanté, what sort of qualities do you want to see in the middle?
It's going to be interesting to see where Fabregas plays. Whether Fabregas plays behind the two central midfielders, whether Conte plays a 3-5-2. If he plays a 3-5-2, yeah, you could potentially see Fabregas playing as a second striker or maybe behind them. Can't really see him as playing one of the functional sort of shuttler roles that Conte does like. Matic could play that role, so they could potentially have Fabregas holding Conte, Matic. But I feel they need a bit of, they need some goals in there, maybe. You know, someone like Vidal would be insane, but obviously potentially wouldn't be coming to Chelsea. But I feel they could strengthen there. Maybe a left wing back as well. That could stretch to play.
They're getting themselves this Victor Lindelof. Apparently, they've triggered his £25 million release clause. He's a right back from Benfica.
Lindelof.
If you
go back to the preview of the Euros, Adam. He was one of the youngest players to watch.
Wow.
I like him. Very, very good. But he's more of a centre back, which potentially means Chelsea are going to go to that back three then, which will be I love the back three.
We've got another question here from. Well, I think we'll have to save this one. Sterling Archer writes in saying, why are you so opposed to capitalism? History dictates there's no healthy alternative. You seem to have mixed it up with corporatism. I think we might have to wait until Lawrence comes back.
Yeah, we need Lawrence for that. You know, we're not capable of answering that question, I'm afraid. Apologies.
Yeah, I think he's the man to give his opinion on that one. Ollie Shep writes in on Twitter, how do you think Gundogan will do at City? Obviously injured, I think, until, is it September?
Yep.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I spoke to Chris Hennes yesterday and he expressed his concerns that coming back, you know, a little bit late, missing, not being peak for pre-season, not being peak for start of the season could impact or limit his impact at City this season.
I think that it'll be like Pep's Thiago Alcantara with it, that was unbelievable when he played, but didn't play enough as he should have done. If Thiago had been fit for the full season, Bayern probably would have won the Champions League under Pep. It was that much of a difference, and Gundogan is exactly the same as that. He's such a good player, but he hasn't been fit since, you know, about 2013-14 season. So when he plays, it'll be really good, but don't think he'll play enough.
Here's a weird one from hashtag Neymar out at trippat171. You guys are very anti-Messi. Stop that.
Are you joking?
And it would be appreciated. I think if anything, we're anti-Ronaldo.
I don't know. I don't think we're anti anyone, Adam. We're just good guys.
I feel in my heart.
We enjoy soccer.
I prefer Messi over Ronaldo. Although this summer has definitely made them a bit closer in my heart, Dave. Ronaldo, you know. Winning the Ballon d'Or, probably now.
If you're going to bring the art into Adam, I'm afraid it is Ronaldo, because what he did at Manchester United. But in terms of players, I think Messi is on a different planet. Like,
because I often get accused of being anti-Ronaldo. I think I tweeted out after the Euros, you know, fair play to him winning, you know, what an amazing player. He doesn't make it easy to like him, but he is like an all-time great. And someone tweeted me.
Very negative, right?
Yeah, someone tweeted me about 2 weeks after I tweeted that to say, "You're a virgin. How does he make it hard to love him? He's the most loved and most hated ever. He's bigger than football and GOAT."
Adam, I can't believe that you're a virgin with those, you know, those good looks. I know, mate. Adam Lallana-esque face.
He really got to the truth of the matter there. That's a weird insult as well. But yeah, I don't think we are anti-Messi. I think it's fair to say that Messi. Maybe should have paid his taxes and
I think that would have made him higher up on the front three wall of love.
How spectacularly misjudged, by the way, was Barcelona's "We Are All Messi" campaign.
Oh my god, fucking Bella.
You know, bringing out this hashtag "We Are All Messi" and, you know, bring these photos, poor Messi. Let's just get a bit of perspective and sort of look at this logically. He did something illegal. Why are you trying to act as if Messi's the victim here? I just found that absolutely bizarre and just, you know, misjudging public sentiment massively. But anyway, enough about that. Another question here from Paolo. He said, what do you think Juventus will buy with a massive $120 million kitty?
I don't think they don't need anything.
No, just have a big party or something. Just spend it.
Yeah, just like what I would do if I was Juventus is I'd put that money into their training facilities and their youth academy. They genuinely don't need Pogba, which is incredible to say that. They've got Pjanic already in, who is, you know, not not as explosive as Pogba, but he's a different player. But a player that is excellent on the ball, player that is a threat from the set-piece situation, scored 4 free kicks, twice as many as any other player in Serie A last season. It's a different player, but a player that will evolve the side again. And they've signed very, very well. You know, Barabi's gone back to Juve, who, for me, is one of the best young players in world football. They signed Fazer from Dynamo Zagreb today, who I was so impressed with when it was Croatia-Spain in the World Cup, completed 7 out of 8 take-ons in that game, which is absolutely insane. And they've bought Benatia at centre-back. If you look at the Juve, they've got 6 defenders that are amazing. I think they've got 5 or 6 defenders at centre-backs. And they've got both of their full-back and their left-back and right-back. There's 2 players there that are awesome. One side, you've got Evra and Alexandro. Other side, you've got Dani Alves and Lichtstein. They are so stacked right now. I don't think they, apart from maybe getting another number 10, I don't think they need anything. Or maybe if they want to upgrade Mario Mandzukic, which they've been linked with Gonzalo Higuain, that's all I'd see do with that money. But I'd invest it.
Black Lives Matter, great username. At Brown Hippie said, where do you see Klopp taking LFC in his time here? League champs, top 4, cheers. Where do you think they're going to finish this season, Dave? And where do you think they could finish under Klopp? Could they win the league under him?
I reckon they could win the league under him.
I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't know. With the competitiveness of the league, I think
so hard now. Yeah,
Klopp had been the manager. Maybe he'd had a summer and he started last season. Klopp would have won the league last year. But I feel like with the competitiveness, with the Guardiolas, the Mourinhos that potentially have had the better of Jurgen Klopp. Sometimes I think Klopp did absolutely smash Mourinho though. In the Champions League, if I'm correct, that could be incorrect. Sorry, guys, if it is. But yeah, I feel like I think they're going to sneak into the top 4. I feel like other teams are going to be stuck in on the Champions League, and Klopp will swing in there and just hit some good form and so forth.
To go off on a slight tangent before the last question, that Black Lives Matter thing, does it? It really annoys me when people say all lives matter. Have you heard of this? As if people are saying only Black Lives Matter. That's not what they're saying. They're saying historically Black lives have not mattered. And it seems like they don't really matter in America at the moment. I just find that really strange that people would have a problem with it. And they'd be like, whoa, what are you saying? All lives matter.
Yeah, I think that's potentially someone that's not educated in the matter.
Maybe slightly ill-informed, yeah.
Ill-informed, yeah. Not yet. Maybe ill-informed. But yeah, it's absolutely mental what's going on in America right now.
Yeah, some people just don't seem to understand. They seem to think everyone's on the same level. So, it's unfair when you say Black Lives Matter and you put them above other people's lives. But like I said, historically, Black people's lives are seen as below that. I mean, even in sexism, people say, you're being sexist against men if you say this. It's kind of like, well, women and men are not equal in society. We shouldn't behave like they are. But yeah, very strange, very annoying, I think. Let's get on to the final question. Go on, what are you going
to
say?
I think a lot of things need to be addressed in this world, and that is one of the things that needs to be massively addressed. Race, sex, whatever. Everyone is exactly the same.
Ah, I don't know.
And that's the game, right? And I think that's what just needs to be accepted by society, and hopefully it will do. And hopefully, because, the progress we've made in all those types of situations has been good so far, but we need to just continue that.
Yeah, last few weeks made me feel
getting a bit emotional.
Depressed.
Right, you know what I mean?
I feel like Lawrence again should be here to discuss it.
Yeah, Lawrence.
Final question, a nice fun question. Hair Solomon, the main man, said, what is your favourite skill move? I love me a good dummy. A dummy. Jesus. I love me a good dummy. Simple, elegant, and effective. My favourite skill move is, I've never seen anyone do it on the pitch, but do you remember that Vine that did the rounds a few months back? A few years back, Juan Mata at the 2010 World Cup, where he sort of drags it behind him, flips it in front of him, and nutmegged, I think it was... Who was it he nutmegged?
I think they're called... I think one of the names for those is the reverse elastico.
Yeah, something like that, the reverse elastico. I think that is it.
Yeah.
Reverse, I'm just Googling it now. I think it is the reverse elastico. Is it?
I think it might be, 100%.
I'm now on some really weird YouTube tutorial channel called Vogel Soccer Mastery.
Go and check it out if you're bored.
Nah, he hasn't got it. But he's not doing the reverse. It's that one anyway, I think. What's your favourite skill move there?
I quite like the elastico or the flip-flap. Ronaldinho used to be so good at doing that. Yeah. But the Paul Scholes dummy has got to be the best of all time. The fake shot, going through his year, smashing, through his 20s, smashing goals in, and then come to his 30s, he developed, you know, the fake shot is just, the poor goals fake shot is brilliant. But also Lionel Messi, again, going back to Lionel Messi, so, so good at dummies, at feints. I prefer feints over flashy tricks.
I love it.
Using your body, beating people that way, it's better to watch in a way.
I think
visually it's lovely.
Favorite skill move is any sort of nutmeg. If you can nutmeg someone, it's like so audacious, it's so humiliating, it's so staggering to see on a professional football pitch. I absolutely love it.
Haven't you nutmegged Lawrence when we've played five-a-side?
Oh yeah, of course. Love it. His legs are wide open, mate.
Wide open.
Love a good nutmeg. Hard to pull. They are actually quite hard to pull off. But yes, the nutmeg, guys. Let us know your favourite skill moves on Twitter, as always, at @TheFrontThree. As I said, we'll be back next Wednesday. We'll be talking about all the news, answering your questions as well. Do keep them coming in on Twitter. Also, keep your reviews coming in as well. It helps us a lot. It helps people find The Front Three, which is always helpful. All you need to do is click the link in the description of this very podcast. It should take you straight to the iTunes store. You can leave a review and a rating, 1 to 5 stars. Obviously, 5 stars preferable, but we won't hold it against you if you give us 1 star.
Always, we might do.
We might do a little bit. we will read out the comment of the week from those reviews next week, as always. For now, though, thank you so much for listening. Dave, where can the good people find more of your work between now and next Wednesday?
You go on YouTube, you type in Dave Talks, you hit that subscribe button, or if you already have subscribed, you'll be happy to know that the Paul Pogba video has been started.
The clamour has been insane for this video, Dave. People have been
the hype.
Going crazy.
The hype is real, Adam. Video is going to absolutely explode the internet.
Bloody hell. that's one hell of a claim. Guys, please come
what
follow
about
me.
You, Adam Boltwood?
Come and follow me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood on Twitter. Come over to the Football Republic as well. We've got loads of great videos. We just had a video up this afternoon, 2016-17 signing of the summer so far. We run through all the biggest transfers, discuss them, and sort of give our opinion. Chris Hennage went for Renato Sanchez, signing of the summer.
Yeah.
And I won't give any spoilers, but Greg Stobart's on there as well as Chelsea Rory, so get your opinions in there. It's a great video. Dave, who's your signing of the summer so far?
Sanchez. I think Henry Mkhitaryan for $26 million is some really good business.
I feel like Kante could well already be the signing of the summer, because $32 million for a player who was that important last season doesn't actually seem that much.
But then he was so important in that side, in that two-man midfield. He's just going to be a cog of Conte's system.
Depends how he's used, yeah.
Yeah, the best signing for Chelsea has been Conte. Very, very good signing.
Ooh, I like it. Guys, do go and check it out. For now, though, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.